I don't. That's fine.
All right, it's 5:30. I guess I can call us to order. And we do the flag salute first and then the roll call. Okay.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Marshall, you're lagging a little bit.
No, it was breaking in and out, Matthew. I'm sorry.
Director Sesenia. Director Gatchell. Director Ohilski.
Present.
Vice President Fourcroy.
Here.
President Womack.
Present. Announcement of closed session items, public employment. We will enter closed session.
And if for whatever reason, Chris, this doesn't work out, just call me on my cell phone, okay?
Okay, I'm sure it'll work. Okay. Do we have any public comment on closed session?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment.
Okay, we shall adjourn to closed session.
All right, Marshall and Chase, just give us 1 second and we'll get the computer and everything set up.
No problem.
Okay, let's reconvene to open session. Can the general counsel report out of closed session for us?
Yes, Chase Martin, general counsel. No reportable action was taken in closed session.
Excellent, thank you. And we'll start with general action item A, adopt a resolution 2021-21, authorizing the execution and delivery of the third amendment to the Enterprise Fund installment sale agreement with the California Infrastructure and Economic Development Bank, IBANC. Ron?
Thank you. Before we get started, we had some technical difficulties tonight, but you can watch this streamed on Facebook if you're inclined. We do have it on Zoom and we have in person. You can also watch it on Facebook. Thank you. So with that, this is a great item. It's always nice to bring something forward that got good news that will save us money. Just a little bit of background. Back in 2004, the district received a loan from the IBANC for $5 million. It was a 30-year loan to fund projects identified in our 2002 Water Master Plan. So now that we're down the road quite a few years, with the interest rates trending downward, our director and president, Womack, took it on upon herself to inquire with IBANC if we could get a reduction in loan. The feedback we got back from IBANC was favorable. If you want to change the slide, please. There was a reduction in the interest rate by 0.55%. So that went from 3.05% down to 2.5%. There is a one-time fee charge for the transaction, which is 0.5% of the loan, and we'll see these figures in just a minute. And the interest rate will be effective October 1st, 2021. So part of the action that IBANC requires is that we adopt a resolution to the effect that we agree to the terms. And in that resolution, we also have the draft rate or the draft agreement in the package. Next slide, please. So what we have on the top part of this slide is the remaining amount with the current interest rate. On the bottom part, it shows the revised interest rate, have the annual fee, the finance charge. And so at the very bottom, the net savings is a little bit over $105,000. And that's great news for us for the Fund 500, our water fund, to be a savings to our customer. And Chris, would you like to add anything to that?
Does anyone have any questions about that? Or yes.
Your microphone.
Yeah, I had one question. Just how long is that loan?
I think it's got about 14 years left.
It goes to August 2034.
So, okay, perfect. Thank you.
And I actually did talk to Nikki Tallman. I called her up and had her talk to iBank because our alternative is refinancing. And it didn't quite pencil out, but I think it did help us. But I did double check with her that that was a good interest rate. And she confirmed that it was, that I believe it was Ventura had some wastewater bonds and it was right in that area. So it's a good interest rate for us. Always like to save money.
Yes. So,
okay. Do we open it for a public comment?
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your at your home, please raise your hand. There's no public comment.
Okay. I'll
move the board adopt resolution 2021-21 authorizing the execution and delivery of the third amendment to the Enterprise Fund installment sale agreement with California Infrastructure and Economic Development Bank.
Thank you. I will second that.
Thank you. Roll call vote, please.
Vice President Porcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
Director Ohilski.
Do we have him?
Director Ohilski? President Womack.
Yes. Is he muted?
No.
Oh. Okay. Well, that passes. General action item B, review of a Los Osos Basin Plan implementation summary, the San Luis Obispo County Water Supply Resiliency Report, and provide direction to the general manager to investigate water resiliency project alternatives. Ron, do you have a
I do
presentation?
That was quite a mouthful. Thank you for making it through that. yes, this is a very important report that I've been anticipating bringing to the board for quite some time. It was all hinging on the release of the San Luis Obispo County Water, and that should be Infrastructure Resiliency Report. I apologize for that error. With that, tonight I will provide a high-level summary of the Los Osos Basin Plan and its implementation status. And then, like I said, review the San Luis Obispo County Regional Water Infrastructural Resiliency Report. I did want to start, if you've had a chance to read the staff report, it'll provide more detail, but I wanted to start with a brief summary of the information provided in the report regarding the history of the Los Osos groundwater basin and the events that have led up to where we are today. As we talked about the information in the report and presentation, it is important to understand, next slide, please, thank you, that the Los Osos groundwater basin is the sole source of water for residential, commercial, institutional, and agricultural properties overlying the basin. Looking back, the community experienced rapid population growth in the 1970s and 80s, which resulted in significant increase in the groundwater pumping, peaking in about 1985. The increase in the pumping resulted in seawater intrusion into the lower aquifer. This coupled with the septic discharges into the upper aquifer over time causing nitrate contamination created concerns for the sustainability of the community's water supply. In 2004, the district initiated action by filing a complaint with the courts regarding the water rights against the other two water purveyors, the county and other associated properties. The result of this action was a court-approved stipulated judgment between the district, Golden State Water Company, S&T Mutual Water Company, and the county. As part of the stipulated judgment, the parties agreed on a basin management plan, which we're reviewing tonight, and to form the Basin Management Committee, which was to jointly manage the basin's water resources. The BMC, or Basin Management Committee, officially started meeting in 2015. First, I'd like to talk about the goals of the immediate goals of the basin plan. It's to halt or, to the extent possible, reverse seawater intrusion into the basin, provide sustainable water supplies for existing residential, commercial, community, and community and agricultural development overlying the basin. And then third, set water conservation goals and establish mandatory standards and policies that promote water efficiency and innovation for water conservation in the community. Next slide. This one I don't expect people to read. There are 10 continuing goals, which are in the report. And also all these support the immediate goals. So we'll just move on from here unless there's some questions. And next, I'd like to provide a brief overview of the Basin Plan programs. There are primarily seven programs that were considered for implementation back in 2015. Imported water was discussed, but not originally considered when the plan was developed during the period between 2004 and 2014. The programs are the Urban Water Use Efficiency Program, that's the Water Conservation Program, programs A, B, C, and D. Program A is supposed to start pumping from the upper aquifer and use nitrate removal treatment to make it potable. Program B primarily focuses on a community-wide nitrate removal facility that would be treat more water through that process. Program C's intent is to move pumping groundwater production from the west to the central area of the basin. And program D is similar, that it is to move the production to the eastern portion of the basin. There's the Water Reinvestment Program, which is the recycled water program from our Los Osos wastewater facility. Most of this water is now going to the Broderson Leach Field, with some going to Sea Pines Golf Course. There was the Supplemental Water Program. This was more in the vein of gray water use, stormwater capture, and did talk about groundwater desalination. In the report, there is an infrastructure implementation table that's way too large to put in this presentation, but it shows the progress to date, which has been fairly significant, with programs A and C nearing completion. Next, I'd like to talk a little bit about the basin metrics, which are one of the most important parts of the basin plan. The metrics have been developed to assist in assessing the progress made from implementing the basin programs, which I just mentioned. The BMC is also in the process of evaluating all the metrics as part of their 2021 work plan. So there may be some changes made to the metrics, mainly the basin yield metric, towards the end of this year. But these are the current ones, or the history of the current ones. The basin yield metric compares the amount of water extracted in a given year with the estimated sustainable yield of the basin under then current conditions, with the goal of being a numeric value of 80 or less. This is to provide basically a 20% buffer between what the basin sustainable yield could be to account for any errors or assumptions that aren't holding true. The water level metric is defined as the average spring groundwater elevation measured in feet above mean sea level in the five lower aquifer wells, with a goal of that being at 8 feet above sea level mean. The chloride metric is defined as a weighted average of concentrations of chlorides in the four lower aquifer wells, with a goal at being 100 milligrams per liter or lower. And then the nitrate metric is defined as the average concentration of nitrate in the five first water key wells located in the basin that have been elevated by impacted nitrate concentrations, with a goal of being 10 milligrams per liter or lower. And that's the key to that one. It doesn't measure nitrate in the lower aquifers, it's just the upper aquifer. So as you can see, I'll go back, please. That's right. This table provides the results from 2015, and as can be seen, the results are mixed on the progress, especially in the two key metrics, the chloride and water level metric. So in summary, after 6 years of monitoring data, it really is showing mixed results, though I do have to say it could take several more years to really see if the assumptions that were made in the plan and in our groundwater model will show the results that were predicted. So far it's mixed. It could take several more years, probably at least 4 to 5, maybe even longer years, to see the trends that were expected, but it could take actually decades for the actual reversal of seawater intrusion. Also, all three purveyors have concerns regarding the sustainability of the basin, both now and in the future. If you recall, we did write a joint letter from the purveyors to the Coastal Commission regarding our concerns. And then finally, there is general agreement that there may be a need to consider other water supply alternatives and to have a plan B, basically, to meet the community's future water needs. Okay, now I'm going to shift gears and talk about the Regional Water Infrastructure Resiliency Plan a little bit. This is a plan that was created by the county and was a result of their 2012 Master Water Report, which included a number of recommendations to improve regional water supply reliability and resilience in the county. The county recognized it early on that it needed input and coordination with staff from other water agencies. So a group was formed, and that's referred as the Countywide Water Action Team, or CWAT. Next slide. Thank you. The main areas of focus, and this is from the 2012 Water Master Report, were infrastructure interties and agreement. And this was the main focus of CWAT and resulted in the development of this plan. And it was to identify opportunities to move water through existing or new interconnected water systems to address critical water supply vulnerabilities. It did also address county water emergency planning. This was in response to the drought that occurred between 2012 and 2017. And this was part of the local hazardous mitigation plan and some other planning documents. One that was more North County related was the Salinas Dam, which is also Santa Margarita Lake. Ownership transfer and maybe the expansion or the installation of the spill gates to add water supply there. But again, that was mostly geared towards North County, and begin discussions on regional desalination projects that might be feasible in the future. That effort is now underway. So what CWAT then did was develop a process to analyze regional water supply vulnerabilities. And these are the key assessments on the slide that each water purveyor's water supply were evaluated for. This was a stepped process resulting in the resiliency score and then identification of available mitigation opportunities. So you can see through the supply and demand assessment, the drought risk assessment, and the supply risk source risk assessment that gave a resiliency score to each water purveyor. And then in the report, there were the opportunities of maybe solving those. Next slide, please. And this is a visual representation. Of course, it's hard to see in here, but there's a lot of other factors that went in. This is in the report, and this graph is in. Next slide, please. So of course, the most of interest to us is the analysis of Los Osos. Los Osos ranked number 9 on the resilience risk rankings out of and we're in the, and there's 40 out of 41 agencies, and we were in the top 5 highest risk because of our single water supply source. So I think the key takeaways I want you to hear from this report is the basin plan could take years, literally years and years, and there is no guarantee that each program will receive or achieve the expected result. The water infrastructure resiliency plan does provide a useful snapshot into what is needed by communities to become water supply resilient, including Los Osos, and that a plan B is needed. And that's why staff is recommending the board provide direction to seek opportunities to diversify our water portfolio and possibly even an interconnection to the regional water system. So in conclusion, with the uncertain impacts of climate change looming, the water supply decisions we're making right now are going to have a significant long-term impact on the quality of life for both our current residents and our future generations. So with that, I can answer any questions.
Thank you for that terrific summary of our position here. Do you have any questions from or comments from the board? Please, Chuck.
Yeah, this is an excellent report for the general public, just to kind of give you a big snapshot of the water situation here, how it got to where it is and what we're looking at moving forward. My only little confusion came about in the difference between the number 9 ranking resiliency risk ranking and then 5 and the highest risk. How did we move from 9 to 5? And
It was because, and there's a table in the plan, and it's very fairly deep, but basically in a nutshell, the ones that were above us, or several of the ones above us, had opportunities for mitigation. And so the top 5 were the ones that were identified that really had no alternatives in the process, you know, in the works, or didn't have any opportunities at all.
Okay. So others may be in worse shape, but they have things they can do about it.
Right. And they have projects actually planned.
They're moving along. Right. Right. Okay. Well, whether we're 5 or 9, we need to think about the future.
Right.
Excellent question. I appreciate that. Do you have any questions or comments?
No. Okay, really appreciate the report, though.
Thank you. It was trying to make it understandable and concise was the challenge.
Chris, this is Marshall. Can you hear me?
We can. Yes, Marshall.
You weren't able to hear me on 7A. I apologize. I don't know what happened. So, no, I piggyback on both of what Chuck and Matthew just said.
Yeah, that was a lot to summarize. I think it was well done. Let's open it up to the public for public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment.
Okay.
Oh. I'm so sorry. Somebody just...
Oh, good.
All right, Deborah, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you very much, Deborah Howe. Just a quick question about the DCEL efforts. Could you just expand a little bit on what that looks like?
Yes, a committee was formed, I happen to be on, to evaluate. There's been a lot of studies since around the early 2000s on potential locations, infrastructure requirements, where the water is actually needed. So the subcommittee is distilling all those studies and will be moving forward with a recommendation to the Water Resource Advisory Committee on a direction to move forward. And this is under the guise of San Luis Obispo County Public Works Water Resources Division.
Does she have further questions or does she still have 3 minutes or some time?
I shouldn't have answered, I'm sorry.
Oh, Deborah, if you have more comments, can you please raise your hand again? All right, Deborah, go ahead and you just have to unmute yourself and go ahead and finish your public comment.
There we go. Thank you, Ron. That was very helpful. So there's not been any location established then for a possible desal plant. Is that right?
No bad.
Deborah, you can just finish your public comment and then we'll have Ron answer after.
Yeah, that's what we should have done is let you have your 3 minutes to ask your questions. And then when we close it, we'll let you go.
Okay, I'm done. That's my only question.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay,
thank you for your question, Deborah. Do you have any other public comment?
There's no other public comment.
Okay, let's close public comment. And now Ron will answer.
Thank you. Sorry about that, Deborah. In those past reports and studies, there's been locations identified in general terms. And again, it could be either one in on the North Coast. Of course, that would be probably in the Morro Bay Cayucas area, or another one on the South Coast, which would be in the Nipomo Oceano area. But nothing has been decided. It's really looking back at where the water demand is, where the infrastructure could be, because there is an opportunity, let's say if it was in the Morro Bay area, to have the state water pipeline available in reverse to then connect to the city of SLO, then to connect to the Lopez system. So there's these interties that could come into play, but nothing has been done to identify a specific location yet.
All right, thank you. Do we have any further questions or discussion from the board?
No, this topic is, of course, going to be of great interest to the community. The next couple of years, we'll be talking about this because it's going to get very complicated, especially in terms of who pays. Is this something that could be needed just for the existing population if drought worsens? We're looking at paying if we stabilize, but maybe this water could help push salt water back and allow new development, and they're on the hook. It's going to be complicated, and I urge everyone to pay attention. But in the meantime, I will move that the board direct the general manager to initiate the investigation into alternative water supply resiliency projects to address the current and future water demands of the district, and authorize the use of $10,000 from Fund 500 Professional and Consulting Services Budget, GL7320, to engage the district engineer for support services during the investigation.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Since Marshall's remote, I have to do a roll call.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Thank you. Director Sesenia?
Yes.
Vice President Forcroy?
Yes.
Director Ohilski?
Yes.
President Womack?
Yes. All right. Okay, general action item 7C. I want discussion of live versus hybrid versus remote only meetings. I kind of wanted to bring this to the board and instead of making a unilateral decision, get some feedback about what you guys are thinking, especially since the Delta variant has, we were nice and had really low transmission and that's changed. Although now it looks like hopefully we're peaking, but I wanted to bring this up for discussion to all of you to see what you, where you guys are.
Thank you. I have a couple of slides to kind of frame this up on decision points for the board. You know, our driving considerations here were like President Womack just said, is that upward trend in COVID cases in the county, you know, since July. If you recall, you know, back in June, we were feeling like, yeah, let's start planning opening up. Let's get the office open. Let's get the meetings live. And then July hit and it seemed to reverse rather quickly. So that is one concern. The other one is the governor's executive order that modified the Brown Act requirements, which is set to expire at the end of this month, which could drive our decisions. And the indications I'm hearing is something should happen before the end of the month, but there's no guarantee with the election, the recall election happening. Everything's kind of in limbo for this. So with that, if you go to the next slide, please. If the executive order expires, our options are to revert back in-person meetings with meetings streamed on slow span for public viewing. That would be kind of like we were doing prior to COVID. We could use the hybrid approach, which we're doing tonight, where board members would attend in person. This, of course, if it expires, but the public could participate remotely. And we wanted to get the committees addressed in this as well. Since they're Brown Act, they would have to go both in person and public in person until we had the hybrid option available. I have to say our experiment tonight shows we are capable. So this is now old news. So next slide. So if the executive order is extended, we could continue the hybrid model like we are. We've done last meeting and doing this meeting. We could, and again, that second bullet really isn't relevant. We could do hybrid meetings for committees as well, or we could return to remote meetings across the board. Next slide. I did want to put a little cost analysis in here for you. Hybrid meetings, if we continue to use AGP, their services are $850 per meeting for hybrid, and then you see the other external costs for the Zoom and slow band indexing for slow span. In-persons are less expensive, strictly in-person, they're $585, and then you have the indexing costs, and the remote, of course, is very inexpensive. What we would have to do for committee meetings is purchase a camera other than my desk camera to really make it work, but there's some expense, excuse me, that would need to be made for committee hybrid meetings or Zoom meetings like that.
That was, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
That was my one question is, do we want to spend money on something we might need for a short period of time, or do you think that camera could be repurposed?
Well, here's the deal, and I think there's been a lot of conversation is, I think with Zoom and the participation level that Zoom can create for the public, we would probably want to stay in some sort of hybrid mode. And committee, of course, we don't use AGP for committee meetings. And so that camera would be strictly for committee meetings, unless we decide to move into a different, you know, work or, you know, business model for our meetings, where we use our camera and we post on YouTube or stream on YouTube, that kind of thing. So I think purchasing a camera is probably makes good sense for the future.
Okay, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's all I had. I just wanted to frame it up what the options may look like. And we're kind of in this interesting period because we don't know what the governor is going to do on the executive order, which could sway us one way or another. I think it's more, in my mind, is do we continue hybrid even if the order is extended, or do we just go back to remote? Would be my, I think, how we'd want to shake it out.
Okay, so can I hear opinions? Maybe start with Marshall.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to go to public comment first, or I can give my opinion first. So I think my opinion at this point is, first of all, I believe that the executive order will be extended because that's what I've been told. It's just because of the recall election occurring over the next 6 or 7 or 5 days that's been deferred. And in which case, I think we should just go back to Zoom meetings. That's my opinion.
All right, cool. Thank you. Chuck?
I have a question about the meetings. Now, we can do a committee meeting hybrid with Zoom and no additional costs once we buy this camera, but not a board meeting. We need AGP for board meetings?
Well, that's a really good question, and that'd be a fundamental shift from how we've done it in the past. I think, you know, our only concern from staff level is then we would be setting everything up, and it may be difficult for Laura and or myself to be able to, if we did more than one camera, to manage that. I guess we could bring someone in for that type of work. So, I mean, there's definitely options, and that's something we have considered. Laura and I have had a lot of discussion on moving away from AGP, though you have to remember on SlowSpan, they've archived our whole catalog of meetings going back to the beginning of time, CSD time.
Right.
And so there's a value there. So I think that would be something we'd have to discuss in the future.
That's basically what we're buying for the costs of AGT, right? Is they're setting up the cameras, setting up the sound system, connecting everything, and then indexing that to SlowSpan.
Correct.
Do we have any idea how many viewers are using SlowSpan? Is there any way to tell?
No, and if you may remember, I don't think they have a way of tracking SlowSpan on streaming.
No, they don't.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know Channel 20, they didn't. I'd have to get back to you on that, Chuck.
No, they do not. I can say that.
Okay.
So, Matthew, did you have a...
Yeah, I mean, I personally think as long following what our guidance in the state, if we can stay open, I think we're more productive in person. I mean, that's... If that's possible to do, and that's not possible to do, then I'm totally fine with our remote meetings, but I think it's more valuable to sit here and have discussions than it is on a computer with dogs and kids and everything else going on. So that's kind of how I think about that. I like that we're doing, I think that we should be doing hybrid meetings. I think that's a valuable piece of it. I feel like there's probably more discussion about AGP and SlowSpan versus some other archiving mm-hmm. that actually people use because mm-hmm. I don't know that I know how to go look at SlowSpan like right now. Right. I have to Google it or something.
Yeah, you Google it.
I think it's a separate discussion.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's where I lean with that.
Okay, all right, thanks for the input. I guess like I'm leaning towards going back to Zoom. I think I look at Los Osos numbers. The last 2 weeks we've had like 40, and back when we opened it up, it was like maybe 3 or 5 a week. And we had this discussion with FAC, and I think everybody wanted to go back to Zoom
Right.
So that's where I'm leaning, but I do like the idea of like changing course if the data changes, if things get better.
Yeah, and if I could just chime in, I think we're nimble enough. We'd have to check with AGP. They're kind of in this interesting situation of hiring people, laying off people, and they are short-staffed. But that said, I think we can demonstrate, like tonight, if we want to go back to hybrid quickly, maybe it's not the perfect hybrid or camera setup, we could do that. And so I guess I'm saying we could go remote and see what happens. You know, best case scenario, we've peaked and it starts coming down and everyone starts feeling comfortable. And again, this is just for consideration.
All right. So does anyone want to provide direction or?
Well, this is Marshall. I agree. I think Chris and I agree. I think assuming that the governor extends his order, I appreciate the hybrid meeting, et cetera, but I think in the short term, we should go back to the Zoom because I think, quite frankly, in my opinion, they're more productive. And I don't want to be in a room with other board members at this point in time.
I think you need public comment on this. It's a general
action item. That's good. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Chuck. Let's open it for a public comment and see if...
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment.
Okay. Now, Chuck.
I was kind of hoping we were coming out of the woods, but it doesn't seem so. And so I'm fine with going back to Zoom if the governor's order is extended. But in the future, hybrid is the way. We're going to have to keep some kind of Zoom component, some sort of way for people to reach out from home, and it just broadens engagement.
I agree.
Yeah, I think
that's... I agree totally that the future would be hybrid and we should go back to Zoom. I agree 100%.
Any way we can increase accessibility, I think, is great. So, yeah, we got pushed into the future a little bit sooner than we otherwise would have. Uh-huh. Can we have a roll call vote then?
Does someone want to make a motion? I guess if there's consensus, I don't think we need a motion.
Then I think the direction is for the time being, we'll go back to Zoom, but we can be nimble if
And what we will do as staff is come back with when we've been able to research a little bit more on the camera situation and get set up for when we do come back live. Okay. We're ready.
Great. I appreciate everyone's input. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So let's open it up for public comment for items not on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay. Bringing it back to the board. Next is administrative and committee reports. And I see we have someone from fire department.
All right, good evening. Paul Province with the fire department, and just going to have a pretty brief report. Nothing too exciting other than the excitement of a new fire engine. I actually put my hands on it, drove it, got to make cool sounds with it, and hopefully we'll be in the state within the next 2 to 3 weeks. So we'll go over the emergency activity report real quick. We're right on pace with where we normally are at with our calls, a slight increase, but that's just due to summertime activities. And my statistics are involved in that and being on duty more days because Cal Fire has asked us to remain on duty and cancel our days off. That's going to bump up our statistics. Still primarily most of our calls are medical aids. We have had some instances of fire, small fires in the area, nothing catastrophic, just small nuisance fires for the most part. Obviously COVID-19. We're seeing an uptick in those related calls, whether they're confirmed cases or whatnot. we are taking precautions. We're asking if you do come to the station that you remain outside, ring our doorbell, we'll come to you, wear a mask, that type of scenario. We're just doing the best we can to work our way through it. Hopefully that item will drop off of our report here in the next 6 months or so. Like I said, went and saw the fire engine, flew back to South Dakota. The county is purchasing two other engines in addition to ours. Engines look good. Right now, the intent is for them to be, we had some corrections for the manufacturer to do. We basically spent 4 days crawling over them with fine-tooth comb and pointing out the deficiencies or the goals that they did hit. So it's going to take a couple of weeks for them to fix those items, and then they'll be driven out here by the manufacturer out to California, and then they'll go from South Dakota down to FAS, which is down in Rialto, for outfitting. We used to do most of our fabrication work here in county, but our fab shop is closed or had a reduced capacity, so we'll be looking to outsource that stuff. And that's mounting of all the tools and just making sure that everything's finalized, computer systems in the vehicles, radio packages within the vehicles, and then mounting of all the tools. And so the idea is to take them all to the same place, because the ultimate goal for us as an agency is to ensure that all the apparatus are the same, regardless of which one we're on, regardless of whatever the number it says on the side or the name says on the side of it, that if we have a driver coming from another area, he can go to any compartment and know what to expect in that apparatus, so it's more efficient for our operation. We got a date on an academy for PCF Academy for the reserves. It's going to be in November, so we went ahead and we put a closed date on the applications, but we're going to keep the application process open beyond that. My direction to the staff has been, we'll just do a quarterly evaluation. Depending on the number of candidates and viability of candidate, we'll decide whether or not to have our physical agility and then our oral exams moving forward. But we do have a good set of candidates for this go around. We're going to keep it open until the 10th, and then on the 10th we'll close it. Actually, that's tomorrow, so we'll close it tomorrow, and then hopefully we'll be able to offer physical abilities testing and then in-person interviews and then get them to the academy. So that's a good progress in the right direction. We sent out the final weed abatement inspection notices this week. It looks like we've got about 20 that are still on the books. What we'll do is, once those go out, and hopefully we can achieve abatement by compliance and not have to go out and send a contractor out to do those things. Once we do that, we'll verify against how many properties we need to go do, how much that'll cost versus the line item in the budget for how much we have. And then we'll do a threat assessment on each one. And if we don't have enough money to cover all the properties, then we will go with the ones that, in our opinion, are the most likely to cause an issue for us. So other than that, that's my report. If you have any questions.
Oh, any questions?
You said the fire new engine would be driven here from South Dakota?
Yes.
What's top speed on one of those rigs?
So right now, as they come equipped, the top speed 75 miles an hour. We are going to have them derated down to 68 miles an hour due to NFPA regulations and the tire rating. So it'll be a 68 mile an hour capable.
So it won't be a 3 week journey from South Dakota.
No. And then ultimately, when they do get here, one thing I did leave out. Ultimately, when they do get here, we're looking to do some sort of ceremony to put the fire engine actually into service. You may see it driving around town ahead of time, and obviously it'll stick out. It's going to be a change. It's red. It's not white. So it'll be a change. So it'll be real obvious when it's cruising around town. We're going to do a little bit of training on it, and then ultimately we'll have an event. Hopefully we can invite the entire community and like to bring some. There's a fire service tradition that when a new fire engine goes into service, that it's pushed into the apparatus bay, and then it's able to run its first call. So hopefully we can get the board involved and the community involved and make it an event at the firehouse. Just it'll ultimately be dependent on how the COVID situation is going.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think that's a great, hopefully that's going to be able to happen. I think that's one of our challenges is to make sure the community knows and understands that it's their choice, you know, that we have the level of service here that we do, and that going forward is also their choice.
Yeah.
So I think that's real important. Do we get a CSD sticker anywhere?
On the engine?
Yeah.
So it'll have the split logo. So it says Salem Obispo County. So there's a couple corrections that they have to make. On the front bumper, it says SLC, which is the three-letter designator for Salem Obispo County. It's going to say SBY, which is the three-letter designator for South Bay.
Cool.
And then on the door, it's going to have the Salem Obispo rocker, Salem Obispo County rocker, but it'll have the dual patch with the CAL FIRE and the Los Osos Community Service District.
Cool. Yeah.
Just like on my battalion.
Yeah, I think I've pointed that out to more and more people who've never noticed that. It's like, yeah, I mean, you voted for that tax, or you're about to again at some point. So,
wait, can people hear you talking to the mic? Well,
the red light's on.
I know, but I'm sitting next to you. I have a hard time hearing you. Oh, okay. Are you guys hearing?
Anyways, I just think it's important that we help make sure everybody is real aware of, yeah, this is going really well, and it's because of everybody's choice here.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I would say from previous districts that I've worked with, the what you guys have done in the past to set yourself up with your sinking fund is really good stuff, and your ability to be able to pay cash for a vehicle. It saves a lot of money in the long run and helps you out, put your focuses other places rather than how are we going to pay for this thing, or, you know, it's 20 years old and falling apart. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
So you guys have done a good job setting that up.
Yeah. Thanks for the update.
And it's a really good point, Matthew, about public, you know, information on this. And I know that's one of our goals at ESAC is to push out more about the services and upcoming expenses we may need. So in case we do have to go out for an increase in that special fire tax, they know why.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's successful.
And I didn't realize you could have them make changes as they're building it. That's pretty neat.
So the way the process works is we write a specifications sheet and we tell them exactly what we want. And then depending on, you know, the level of experience in purchasing fire engines, our agencies buys a couple of them. You know, we bought three, and I'm actually going back with Salem Obispo County to buy four more in the next couple months. We're going to spec out four new ones, and we're actually changing the specification to more modernized type of deal. But we went back with four of us, and one person sat there with the spec sheet and read line by line. We brought our mechanic with us. He crawled over each one of those apparatus, and then the other two of us went line by line with the person reading the spec and verifying every dimension. And when there are corrections, you know, there comes some negotiation. Is it something that we can live with? And can we use that as leverage to get something, you know, something else added to the fire engine or something else corrected that maybe was an oversight on our part?
All right.
So.
Very interesting. That's great.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Do we have Sheriff? All right. General Manager report?
Yes, I'll be very brief tonight. I did have a few items in my written report. Most notable is the 8th Street Upper Aquifer Well Project. We had our kickoff meeting earlier this month. Unfortunately, there's some significant lead time on some of the electrical equipment due to supply chain interruptions, but we're going to try to piece together a schedule that will hopefully get that online here by the end of the year. We have started our permitting process with, or at least filling out the minor use permit to get into the county for the minor use permit for the program Seawell. So hopefully we'll get that in. I'm trying to initiate conversations to see if we can expedite that given the nature of the drought and things we're experiencing in the basin currently. I just did want to note for people that didn't come to the September 2nd meeting that we are continuing our by-area election transition, and that we have another meeting coming up on October 7th. Our hope is to actually get into the demographic information and mapping, so please attend. The joint water purveyor letter that the board approved a couple of months ago has been sent to the Coastal Commission and the county. So that is now in their records. And I always want to close by reminding people of our drought that, you know, we're in our D3 in on the Central Coast, which is extreme drought. We're in stage three in the district. We have been upping our public information outreach. We have been sending letters to our top water users, and we're actually getting some fairly good responses back. Some people are mad, but most are appreciative. So we're making efforts there. With that, I can answer any questions.
I just had a comment. I love it when you tell the story about how things cost less than we expected. And there are a couple of instances in the utilities.
Oh, and yep, I'm sorry. Yes, there were.
So thank you for that. I enjoy it when you tell that story.
We did do a utility vehicle replacement. We had budgeted $50,000 and it came in just a little over $33,000. And the bonus on that, it was from a local dealership. So our tax dollars stayed in county. And so that was definitely a great savings for us. And that the 8th Street Upper Aquifer Well, we had an engineering estimate of $310,000 for the work that's proceeding. And the bid price that came in was $207,300. Significant savings there. And we're going to need every penny we have as we move forward with our other projects.
Thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Just an observation. Any other questions for Ron? Okay. So do we have a verbal report for the Utility Advisory Committee?
We did not meet this past month.
Oh.
But I did want to call attention to the fact that, boy, we sure have cut back on that Palisades well, and it's nice to have 10th Street up and running again. It's nice to have our options back.
Yeah, and I think I did tell you we had issues with the 8th Street well. It was down for a couple of weeks. I think either today or tomorrow it'll be back in full action. So nice. I guess we can't make it through a summer without a well going down.
Yikes.
We almost made it.
All right. Oh, and okay. And the Finance Committee, they voted to receive the administrative and committee reports and approve the committee minutes. And they also recommended we adopt the resolution, which we adopted earlier. So that's it for Finance. ESAC was canceled. Let's see. Did Marshall had a, does he do a report on the
basin management?
We didn't meet, but I do have a report on the estuary program.
That's it, the estuary program.
Yes. So the estuary program, the executive committee, we had our quarterly meeting on August 18th. Our vice chair, she has gone on to different work after, or pardon me, different work mode. So we approved a new vice chair for our committee. And then we talked about some potential changes to the executive committee membership. Primarily having to deal with the agricultural representatives because we've been having difficulty finding a rancher or a farmer who would want to participate. So we decided to open that up to agricultural related groups above and beyond just property owners. And then we had an update on our community projects and the estuary program. We got our program evaluation letter update from NEP, and we discussed that. And then we discussed the program highlights for what's happened in the last 3 months. And that was pretty much it. I don't know. Chris attended her first meeting as my alternate, so I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Chris.
That was a good summary. That was my second meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just like hearing what goes on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it was a good meeting. And then our next meeting will be in 3 months from August. So and hopefully we'll be able to have our event tied into the boat parade this year. But again, that's all going to be COVID related. We'll just let you guys know ahead of time.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Thank you, Marshall. do we have any director's announcements of district and community interest and reports on attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars? Okay. I don't believe we have any previously asked questions.
No, we do not.
Okay. I believe we open up for public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda.
Do you want to see if anybody wants to
pull? Yeah, let's see if anybody wants to pull an item first, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Laura just told me. Does anyone want to pull an item from the consent agenda? Okay, now we'll open it up for public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment.
Okay, bring it back to the board.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, excellent. I'll second. Thank you, Matthew. Okay, I guess we're roll calling.
Director Ohilski.
Yes.
Vice President Forcroy.
Yes.
Director Sesenia.
Yes.
President Womack.
Yes. Okay. Does anyone on the board have a future agenda item? Okay. Does anyone have any closing comments? All right. I'm going to say a huge thank you to Ron and Laura for getting us up and running with the hybrid meeting with like an hour notice. We're so lucky to have you. That's just phenomenal. Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks everybody who attended, and thank you to all the board members for serving. And meeting is adjourned.
Hey.
Thanks, folks. Nice working with you. You all have a, you run a great meeting.
Oh, thank you.
Bye, Chase.